Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And it's bread week.
Yum, 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 yum.
This is, you know, what separates the boys from the men in the Bake Off tent.
De Bella de Ball.
Okay, prison Mike. wait, are you watching the paper? Have I recommended that you
I
watch
have.
It yet?
I am, and you did, and I am.
Do you like it?
I'm nervous. I am what I am. I do like it. Yeah, I do like it. We are not finished with it yet. Okay. So stay tuned.
I love it. Tell me when you get to the scam episode because I thought it was a work of genius.
Love it. Okay. Will
do. Okay. So yeah, that was just a listener's. It was just Bits and me catching
just
up on
housekeeping.
TV. Yeah. If you're not watching The Paper, The Office spinoff, I highly recommend. I think it's excellent. But we have more pressing matters because, as we said, it's bread week, but also because we have a leftover that I am so excited to share with Bits and the world. But like, okay, so we have two leftovers from last week. The first is that we wanted to maybe explore renaming Amuse Bouche for the purpose of our Bake Off coverage. And the second is a history of Jumbo Kingdom, the floating restaurant in Hong Kong. Which one do you want to do first, Bits?
We need to – let's just address the Amuse Bouche because okay. I did my due diligence, mm-hmm. whatever that means.
Maybe.
Look, I like Amuse Bouche.
Okay.
Here's what I came away with. There were some suggestions that were like, crumbs. Like, just like – I guess that's an expression of like, wow, great. Or like, gadzooks, like crumbs. But that doesn't crumbs. Tell you anything about what – I just – there's just no – it works. Okay. And as we see this episode, the French have quite an influence in the tent. So I think –
They do.
I think Amuse Bouche stays.
Okay. I just would like the record to state that it was your idea to rename Amuse Bouche. So I feel it was a bit accusatory just now where you were like, it's good enough, as if I had given
Leave
you
me alone.
This
No, I'm glad I did my due diligence. And, you know, it's like a scientific experiment. I found that I prefer the control.
Love it. Okay. Well, then let's move right past this because I was not expecting the history of Jumbo Kingdom to be as interesting as it is. Like, please buckle up because you are in for a ride with twists and turns you didn't even know were there. Are you ready?
And I'm so ready, but a quick refresher on Jumbo Kingdom
Thank
is.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. So last week, Poi Mon did her showstopper of a replica made out of biscuits of a restaurant called Jumbo Kingdom, which she said was a floating restaurant in Hong Kong. And she was talking about how she has tons of family memories there. And then she got very sullen. She said, unfortunately, Jumbo Kingdom sank. And it was a punchline like no other. So Bits and I were naturally very curious about this sunken Jumbo Kingdom because we are avid followers of shipwrecks. Mm-hmm. Most notably the Titan Submersible. Mm-hmm. I know the Bits, I mean, it's really big on Titanic Reddit. Mm-hmm. Those two things are linked. And other shipwrecks in general. If any of you are listening and have good shipwreck content, please let us know. But with that context, we are diving in, pun intended, to Jumbo Kingdom. So before we actually talk about Jumbo Kingdom, I want to talk to you about the origin of floating restaurants in Hong Kong. So floating restaurants, predecessors to the big floating restaurants that exist today, were once fishermen's barges. They were on the Guangzhou and Pearl River areas. They had they were essentially just like floating restaurants for fishermen out during the day. But then over time, they became more and more popular. They linked a bunch of boats together, and they started building out these huge platform restaurants that floated on water. And they had stages built into them for people to host banquets, sing, and dance. During the 1920s and 30s, Hong Kong fishermen from Aberdeen began operating similar barges in the city. So those were barges on the Guangzhou and Pearl River. Mm-hmm. And then fishermen in Hong Kong were like, well, why don't we do that here? So that's sort of the origin.
Okay.
Of the floating restaurant. Any questions?
No, I'm fascinated.
Me too. Someone needs to write a book on this. Okay. Now let's fast forward to the year 1976. Jumbo Kingdom was established in 1976 by Stanley Ho. It cost more than 30 million Hong Kong dollars to design and build it. If you want to do a quick conversion, I didn't do that. But that's a lot of money. And it was originally decorated in the style of an ancient Chinese imperial palace. So right out of the gate, Jumbo Kingdom is doing a lot. But then Stanley Ho later purchased Tai Pak in 1980 and Sea Palace in 1982, operating all three competing restaurants. So he essentially had a monopoly on the big floating restaurants of Hong Kong.
Whoa.
And they were all under the name Jumbo Kingdom.
Whoa. I mean, I guess you need multiple castles for it to be a kingdom.
Yeah, like a kingdom obviously has subjects, and right. It makes sense that there are many different locations of the Jumbo Kingdom.
Yeah, right.
So that was through the 70s and 80s, you know, Stanley Ho was amassing this floating restaurant empire in Hong Kong. In 2003, they did a multi-million dollar renovation, which led to Jumbo Kingdom having an area of 249 feet in length, 4,200 square meters, so it's 45,000 square feet in area.
Wow.
I don't even know what that equates to. Like, I am really bad at visualizing numbers, but I think that's let's see how many square feet the Taj Mahal is.
Mm-hmm.
Should have done that comparison. The Taj Mahal is 9,000 square meters, which is how many square feet is the question.
Is this like a floating conference center?
Pretty much. Okay, 9, like times three.
It's basically 36,000 square feet.
Okay, so it's bigger.
Yeah.
Wait, no. 9,000 square meters is 96,000 square feet.
Oh.
Okay, we're doing math live here, everyone.
How are we doing this?
So,
okay.
Jumbo Kingdom is half the size of Taj Mahal. It's insane. And by the way, the Taj Mahal is more than just the building. There's a huge marble like platform that it's on. So we're talking half the size of the whole shebang.
Okay. Well, also question, is it Jumbo Kingdom? Was that like, is it known as Jumbo Kingdom English, or was it translated from? I mean, I know we cannot
That's
speak
a great question.
Chinese,
I believe it's just Jumbo Kingdom.
Yeah. Wow. Love it.
Okay, we're not even halfway through the story. I'm sorry. I need to keep going, but it's just so fascinating. Okay, so inside has seating capacity of 2,300 diners, along with a dragon throne, aquarium, and six-story pagoda. This thing is a floating city unto itself.
Unbelievable. All
right. Now let's get to the present day. On March 1st, 2020... That date might sound familiar because it was sort of the global start of the coronavirus pandemic. On March 1st, 2020, the restaurant announced that it would be closed until further notice and laid off all staff due to COVID-19.
Wow.
It never really reopened in earnest, and there were a lot of efforts to preserve Jumbo Kingdom and reinstate it after COVID because it was a cultural staple in Hong Kong. I think it was widely known to not have like the best food, but it was so iconic that like people went there.
Yeah,
and
no doubt.
It was just a really important part of the fabric of the city of Hong Kong. And so a lot of organizations tried to preserve it, but none of them could raise enough money to do it. There were a lot of parties approached by the company to maintain it, said that it would be way too expensive for them to like convert it and bring it up to modern code.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a campaign to have the government declare it as a landmark, but it turns out that boats are not allowed to be landmarked. and the government said that it would not be a good use of taxpayer money.
Wow.
Need a boat mark. And the government said it wouldn't be a good use or fair of good use. Sorry, excuse me. A fair or good use of taxpayer money because the government is, quote, not good at running such establishments. So,
wow.
All right. So what happens to this floating jumbo kingdom in Hong Kong Harbor that is completely derelict? Well, I'll tell you. It turns out that Jumbo Kingdom was unprofitable since 2013 and had accumulated losses exceeding 100 million Hong Kong dollars as of 2022.
Since 2013, it's been operating at a loss.
Unprofitable.
Whoa. Okay. Well, that was seven Crazy. Years. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Long time. And so on May 30th of 2022, the company announced that the restaurant would leave Hong Kong Harbor in June of 2022. Because okay. its operating license with the Marine Department was due to expire and there was no berth available for Jumbo Kingdom to park in.
Wow.
Okay. So the restaurant barge was eventually towed out of Hong Kong Harbor on June 14th. Though it was never confirmed, its destination is rumored to have been Cambodia, according to the Marine Department. And on June 18th, 4 days later, while being towed in the South China Sea. So this thing was out at sea. It did not sink in Hong Kong Harbor. Okay. In the South China Sea, the restaurant experienced bad weather, began capsizing, and eventually sank in the South China Sea.
Oh, my God. Okay. I am looking at a GIF and sped up animation of it leaving the harbor. Which is crazy? Really fascinating. Yeah. I mean, it looks like one of those just enormous cruise ships. Yeah. There's a bunch of tugboats around. Yeah. Oh, my
it's
God.
It's wild. And so despite rescue efforts, it fully capsized on June 19th, 2022 near the Paracel Islands in waters over 3,300 feet deep.
Wow.
Crazy.
Oh, my God.
So, this thing sank in open water.
Wow. 3,300 feet. That's, that's only also kind of interestingly, only, a quarter of the way that the Titanic sunk.
Okay. Everything comes back to Titanic with you. Could you give Jumbo Kingdom a second to mourn without bringing up the Titanic?
I'm going to let you finish. But Beyonce, but Titanic had the best sinking of all time. Okay.
Oh my God. Okay. I know that was really long-winded, but
important.
It was so fascinating. I had to give every single detail of that.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
That is. It should be noted that the sister restaurant Thai Pak was left behind. So it is still there.
Okay. Well, that's good, I guess.
Yeah. So that's. You know, the history of Jumbo Kingdom and its capsizing. I think with all of that bits, unless you have any more Titanic fun facts or conspiracy theories you'd like to share. No?
No.
All right. Well, then let's begin.
Wow. we're back. Episode 3, it is bread week, as you mentioned, Nancy. And as we mentioned, there's no improving on a moose bouche. So what is your moose bouche this episode?
Oh, my amuse bouche is I was kind of surprised that we didn't get any traditional bread loaves this episode. I think the monkey bread is kind of a funky take on bread. Then we have donuts, which you don't normally think of as bread.
They do make
I
me go nuts, that. Though. Not this week, though. Not this week. These donuts did not make me go nuts.
I actually thought the donuts looked good for the most part.
So they did.
But yeah, and then we have this sweet bread tower. I think that what GBBO is suffering from a little bit is they've done every challenge that they could possibly think of. It's okay if we go back to just sourdough loaves, you know? I want to see some traditional bread baking. What's your amuse bouche?
I couldn't agree more. That was my exact amuse bouche. I actually was a little disappointed by this bread week. It felt like we're operating on the periphery of what bread is. But Nancy, my other amuse bouche is I gotta know our orange counter coming out of this episode because I think almost everybody baked with orange this episode. Like,
it was an insane amount. I need to go back and double check this. But I think that there were 5 instances of orange this episode.
Okay. We might need to, rewind the tapes because I started keeping count because I was like, good God. The showstopper. So let's put a pin in that till we get there. But
okay, yeah.
The orange is out.
It is important to note that as of episode 2, we're already at 9 instances of orange this season.
Good God.
So let's say it's somewhere between, it's at least 5, then we're way past my prediction of 12.
Yeah.
We're even farther past your prediction of, I don't even know what, like 7?
Mm-hmm.
So once again, orange coming out as the British favorite flavoring in any baked good. Y'all need to expand those palates. That's all I have to say about that.
Yes.
But why don't we talk about the signature? Let's just dive right into it.
Monkey bread. I love monkey bread.
I love monkey bread too.
And it's funny because it's not something – we made it a lot growing up, and I have not really had it since or really heard of it since.
Wait, I was thinking the exact same thing, but when we made monkey bread – it was always like cinnamon sugar. And I don't know that it was actually a yeasted bread. It was more like cake and that you would like roll into balls and put together. But maybe it was.
Yeah, that's dough. A good point. I don't know. I need to ask my mom. I can't remember. I don't remember feeling like that much work. So if it was yeasted bread, it was like we were using like Pillsbury crescent rolls or something, you know, like
Bits. Yeah. Like I also remember that it was a very low level of effort.
Yeah.
Baked good.
Yeah. But
and it was so good.
So good. So much butter, so much cinnamon. It's just like a big cinnamon bun that you rip apart.
Yeah.
But of course they had to put their like weird British twist on it. I'm going to be honest, like I actually was pretty into, I forget who rocked the Stilton.
There were a lot of Stiltons.
A lot of Stilton. Yeah, we should have a Stilton counter. That, I mean, it needed to be savory, correct? Because somebody's Natalia's was sweet and they weren't vibing with that.
Yes, I think that savory was like sort of the suggested flavor profile.
Okay, yeah.
We saw a lot of Stilton, but actually before we even get into it, my first note, and I understand how this plays out, but the very first bullet point I have for this episode is this is Ian's week to lose.
I know. He was talking a big game.
He's been talking a big game. He's shown that he like clearly is a very technical breaker. I'm also very happy that right out of the gate, Ian acknowledge that his girlfriend is like a foot taller than he is, because I've been holding back on saying something, but now that he's entered it into the conversation, I am very happy that we can comment on it.
Wait, did you know what his girlfriend looked like? How did you?
Yes, in the first episode, there's a clip of them walking together.
Oh,
and she
towers
over him.
Wait, but does she look? Because we also hear this episode that the girlfriend thinks that she looks like Noel. And I don't remember what she, if she,
you
got
to go
like
back
Noel.
To episode
so
one, because both of these things are true.
Wow. Crazy. Okay. Very exciting. We've got some homework ahead of us. That is, that is for sure. I know, man, he was talking to the game. I think Toby similarly was also pretty locked in on.
Yes.
Brandy.
Yes.
But,
and both of them, you know, had some pitfalls, but you know who had a good week? That I was really happy about. Mm-hmm. Nadia. I am a big fan of Nadia. I think she just brings a real joy and like less wholesome attitude to the bake-off tent. And I really appreciate
her. She's a bit of the like Georgie archetype.
Yes. Yes.
Just like classic home baker, cooks with love, like cooks from a point of view that is just very her own. Yeah, I feel like we're going to get great stuff, and I don't want to jump ahead, but her showstopper was one of my favorites too.
Incredible. Incredible. Yes. Okay, let's keep it to the signature. So why don't we talk about some of the signatures that really stood out to us in this regard? What was your favorite?
I mean, Jasmine's sounded great. I think Jasmine obviously had a very strong app. She goes on to win. Spoiler. Jasmine is officially the one that Paul, I think, is obsessed with. Paul is obsessed with one baker every season. Last one, it was definitely Dylan. Mm-hmm. And this one, he's got a crush on Jasmine.
Which, by the way, I called Ep 1.
Yeah,
I
you did.
She's
you
one
did.
To watch.
She is one to watch, as we saw this episode. Nancy, what about you? Who is jumping out to you this round?
In terms of bakes, actually, I do think that Ian did a good bake. But what I want to talk about is Tom. Tom made a crazy monkey bread that I don't really feel like got enough airtime. He made three different French dishes and put them inside the bread. It was wild. And when they cut into it and you saw like the cross section, it was gorgeous. So he had a red wine, a steak, and a French onion soup flavor. Three different flavors. Prue
I love that he just has
loving
steak.
It.
Yes, steak. She's obsessed with him. I think she's obsessed with him the most.
I'm kind of obsessed with Tom. I think he's so talented.
Good hair.
Yes, very. Another bake that jumped out at me that I thought was very tasty and interesting, honestly, was I'm looking at all of this. I was excited about Poimon's bake. Firstly, because when she had all the ingredients laid out, it gave me flashbacks to when Dylan used gochujang and they were like, I've never tasted this mysterious flavor before.
What is this?
Yeah. So I was hoping for a repeat of that moment. Unfortunately, though, we see Poimon struggling a lot this episode, the same way she did last episode, in both the signature and the technical, really not finding her footing. And when it came to the signature bake, she did essentially like a Chinese flavored bread where there was some with like red curry paste, some like with morning glory, which Paul did not hesitate to make a joke about morning wood.
She had red bean curd.
Sorry, red bean paste. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I think the commentary for her was that it needed a glaze, it needed salt, it was underproofed, and there wasn't enough flavor coming through. So sort of at every mark, she didn't hit it.
Yeah. I also think, again, we saw our boy Aaron kind of like bottom of the pack. He was doing like an onion, fennel, chili.
Yep.
And like Paul clearly wasn't vibing with it. And then he's just like, oh, you know, they were like kinder than they could have been. I'm like, justice for Aaron. This guy continues to just be. I mean, he pulls it out later in the ep, but like, just let him rise. Let him rise like a second. He needs a second proof.
He needs a second proof. That is exactly what happened this episode. First proof wasn't great, but second proof, he really rose to the occasion.
Off.
Pun intended. Yes. Yeah, that was nice because. It's interesting because Poimon did something last episode that I don't think anyone has ever pulled off, which is really excel at the showstopper, so much so to make up for incredibly poor performance on the first day. And she almost did it again this episode. Spoiler alert, Poimon does get sent home this episode despite having an exceptionally good showstopper. But Aaron did the thing that most bakers have the most trouble doing, which is coming back from a poor performance in the signature. A lot of the times, once they, you know, sort of falter in the showstopper, they just can't find their footing. But Aaron then continued to climb steadily throughout the week. And he really saw good results there.
Yes. On the whole, it was like not my favorite signature for a bread week. It was okay. It was fun because like everybody got some of a different flavor profile in it. But let's talk about the technical because the technical, they had to make a dozen, quote, ring donuts. Six of them glazed, as we would know. Glazed whole donuts. Six of them needed to be frosted. Frost yourself. Nancy, thoughts on this technical?
So I do think it's fun to see them try to make donuts. I was hoping for a way more interesting bread week technical. I'll say it. It just felt, I don't know. I guess bread week is tough because bread, of course, requires a lot of time. And there aren't a lot of short bread challenges.
Yeah.
And I don't mean short bread like the cookie. Yes. But, you know, in past years, they've done babka. Like, they've done yeasted breads.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I just, when I think of bread, I don't think of donuts. And I guess maybe that was sort of the trick. But as a viewer, I was like, really? Like, we couldn't have thought of a different way, different week to use the fryer?
I think for me, it was like an either or with the monkey bread and the donuts. It's like you can do, you can pick one of those, but you can't have both. They're both, they're both in the same tier of like, this is a bread. You can do like one that's a little off the wall. And I will, I can reason out the fact that like donuts do require like some technical skill and there's like a multi-step process. And, you know, on the, like, it does seem like a complicated – there are multiple moments where that could go wrong in a way that, like, a technical always has. So I didn't – I don't know. Maybe, like, as I played this out, I didn't hate this technical for bread week. I just would have needed something a little bit more classic in the signature.
Yeah.
Because
I think we've seen them do jelly donuts before as a technical.
Yeah.
Not during bread week. And I can't remember what season it was, but I sort of have vivid memories of a jelly donut situation. I did like the – it's so interesting how they present these bakes. Like the hobnob is this like beautifully intricate thing with the feathered lines. And then the way that the strawberry donut was frosted was beautiful. I thought they were going to have to do like the Dunkin' Donuts classic of like the hot pink icing with the sprinkles. But it was beautiful. Yeah.
It was still really nice. And I liked the ones who decorated it, where it was the spiral the whole way around.
Oh, Jasmine. Nice. And like Paul was like, someone got a little cheeky with that one. And Prue was like, I think it looks nice.
Yeah. And honestly, like I might have thought the same. Like, I don't know. That's kind of vague.
Yes, I completely agree.
Yeah, so I don't know. I kind of dug it. I really felt for Poi Mom because she was just clearly – she was in her head from the signature. Yep. She's coming into this. She's like, I don't know. I'm going to be on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. We had another kind of like knockout performance. Jasmine ends up winning this round.
Yes, but Nadia in second.
Nadia in second. And Aaron in third, which I was so happy to see.
Yeah, he needed that to like, like end off his day so he didn't feel totally beholden to the showstopper.
Yeah.
And so I was happy for him that he could go to sleep maybe and rest a little easy. Because third place puts you in pretty good standing.
Yeah, agree.
For the day.
There was a lot to, you know, they had to like glaze it. So you have to like wait till it's cool, but you're frying it. So yeah, it was interesting to me. I think it's all good, but it just didn't, it hasn't felt like bread week yet so far in the tent.
Perfectly put. But why don't we then try to give it a third shot with this showstopper? Alrighty. Mm-hmm. So the showstopper is to create a celebratory sweetbread with three tiers. What? Once again, why didn't you just make the cake week showstopper a tiered cake challenge if that's what you wanted?
Yeah.
You know, like I just, ugh.
See, this one was interesting to me too because I came out like going into that when they told the challenge, I was like, okay, this feels like very put on, made up. But then everybody seemed to have there were very clear through lines and multiple people doing the same thing. So we had Karan's, like we had like the wedding sweetbreads, which I didn't even know that was an option. Like I didn't know that that was something that happens at weddings. Like you could just have like a cinnamon bun tower. So what's with the like – is it just they're like plopping wedding on it because it's a tiered situation? Okay.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. All right. That's like, weird.
I don't think Nadia's dream wedding is actually to have a bread cake. And
I don't know.
The commentary
I kinda like
that she got was like, it's practically cake. You know, like they were doing these approximations because
– yeah.
I guess maybe I need to go back and remind myself what bread week technicals usually are. Showstoppers. I guess technically monkey bread is savory. Maybe it's just like my childhood bias that I keep thinking of it as a sweet thing. But at no point do I feel like they had to show off like just good bread baking.
Yeah. And they tried to like bring it into the conversation. And, you know, I think for on Jessica's, we need to talk about the decor on these two. Jessica did like a agricultural rain dance themed cake from her time in Africa, which I don't mean to be like, that just is the shorthand memory I had of that. So, but it was like, that's the kind of shit I love in the tent where they're just like, I'm going to pick this extremely specific memory and then yes. I'm going to like make little cake people to decorate this cake. Yes.
By the way,
bread.
We are not laughing at the rain dance or the experience thereof. We are laughing at like the thing that Bake Out brings out in people to like shoehorn these two incredibly niche things.
Yeah, they're like children's dioramas. It's like a it's just so bizarre. Okay, Nancy, I'm gonna run down the we're in the showstopper, but just to back mm-hmm. up to the technical to run through what they did in the technical over bread weeks. They had white bread, focaccia, plaited loaf, English muffin, that's a good one, ciabatta, mm-hmm. baguettes, cottage loaf, non-yeasted naan. Oh my God, you remember when they did the burger buns? That was stupid too. That actually might be the stupidest one.
That was really stupid, but I guess it's just brioche. But I mean, RIP Taco Week or Mexican
Week.
Oh
God, yeah.
Years ago.
And then they had the 7-strand plait, which I remember us bitching about last year because we were like, yes. you know. But yeah, so, okay, maybe on the whole, like, really only in the first, like, 6 seasons were they doing the sort of standard fare, and since then it's been pretty much off the rails, so.
Yeah, but, it's those first 6 seasons that really hooked me.
I know. So, just loop back through. I wouldn't mind seeing another ciabatta. I do think that I would put donuts in the, like, top 7. Like, I think it's like in the middle of the pack as far as things they've made.
Sure. Yeah. I would say that. But I think because all 3 of these sort of were like very fantastical types of bread, you need one of these to be a grounded table stakes basic kind of bread.
Yes.
Because I think this is a really good example why Ian, and we can talk about him, like didn't really perform well. He is clearly a very technical bread baker and he's really good. He has mastered the fundamentals of bread baking.
Yeah.
But when every single challenge on Bread Week are these kooky variations of bread making, I don't think you're actually testing the fundamentals at any point. Or maybe you are. Maybe that's like a bit hyperbolic, but you're not giving someone like Ian any moment to shine.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of window dressing that
isn't
his forte. Yeah. 100%.
But so let's talk a little bit about Ian's showstopper. So he wanted to make a Samhain celebration bread.
Samhain,
which I always forget is spelled Samhain.
Yeah. Just what do they do with that M?
Where does it go? Silent M.
They flip it upside down and they pronounce it like a W.
That's how you do it. Anyway, he had a lot of trouble with timing. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the right amount of time to prove the bread. Unfortunately, they said not neat, underbaked, underproved, and the apple ruined the texture. Like ruined it. Ruined.
That stinks. I also unrelated had the realization that Ian, and this sucks too, coming from the guy that like baked Paul's face on a loaf of bread. Ian looks like somebody who is like a music manager for like a famous rock band in the 1960s. Like he looks like he could be the Beatles manager. He just seems like a kind of like cool guy. He's got his like cool haircut and he's just like a cool guy. I don't know. He just seems like the type. So if he wants to look into another career.
He clearly is a short king. Yeah. All of the men I know who are in relationships with taller people, including my father, are incredible people. So I have a bias towards this. I think that Ian's got great energy and I want to see him do well. And it made me sad at the end of the episode where he was like, I'm pretty sure I'm going home.
That is, yeah. I'm glad it wasn't
a moment
him.
Where he could have.
I know. That would have been horrible. Let's talk about some other horrible stuff before we talk about some fun stuff.
Yeah.
We did get a Korovai off. So we had both Leslie and Natalia making like a Ukrainian celebration bread. Leslie did an orange and rum soak. There we go, orange. Mm-hmm. Natalia's was sort of overwrought, literally, like overlaced, over-decored.
Claggy.
Claggy. We got a few claggies in this round, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So seems like Leslie took that. Somebody who maybe they're honestly on the whole between those two, the people that were kind of you know, fumbling along early in the episode really pulled out. I loved Poiman's celebration cake. I loved her backstory, just how, okay, the roses are bad feng shui, but then my now husband planted them in the backyard and we're married. And I also loved the look of her roses. They were so just
– they were beautiful.
They're vibrant.
And I love that they were bred and not piped.
Yeah, yeah. They were just stunning. Gorgeous. I thought she did a great job. I too was sort of on the coconut and glazed cherry, but I love when people surprise Paul. Mm-hmm. And so that was just really nice to see from Jumbo Kingdom.
Yeah, it is nice. I think the joy of seeing Paul surprised is something that I give him a lot of credit for, is that he is always willing to admit when he was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like you very rarely see him insisting on like, you know, that his opinion was right, despite having very strongly held opinions. And so that was just one of those moments where you're like, even the best are open to criticism and feedback and are willing to have their mind change, which, you know, in the world we live in is quite a refreshing perspective to see on television.
Yes. 1000p.
Okay. Let's talk about some good bakes that we saw.
Yes. Okay. Tom.
Knock,
knock. Making those cinnamon buns.
He was so beautiful.
His was beautiful, but
exposed swirls.
Okay, his tree in that ice bath did give me a jump scare. Yeah. Even before all the commentary started spinning, I was like, are they going to address this? And I'm glad they did.
You know what it reminded me of?
Like when you're a kid and they make you get out of the pool? Because that's what it reminded me of.
No, it reminded me of when you made homemade Diana's bananas. I think I literally have a photo on my phone. Diana's Bananas, aka Diana's Bananas, please sponsor us, are a delicious treat that you can find in the freezer aisle. They are chocolate-covered frozen bananas.
So good.
And Bits, when like we were very young, probably 10 years ago, attempted to make homemade Diana's Bananas. And they looked like feces in the fridge. They were like on this baking sheet in the freezer. And I remember you were like, hey, go to the freezer. I made a like homemade Diana's Bananas. And I was like, what the
fuck? I still have the visual in my mind. We had a friend over, a friend Mitch, and he opens the freezer and there's like one light in the freezer and it's shining directly over this like little stumpy log of chocolate covered banana. And he had a jump scare.
Yeah, well, and I think that you put like red and green sprinkles on them.
If I know. I like to do little sprinkles because when I grew up, we had a Gertrude Hawk. I always accidentally call it Gertrude Stein. It is not a Gertrude Hawk, which is like a chocolate store. You know, they have like chocolate stores in the mall where you can go and get like chocolate covered stuff. Yeah, Gertrude Hawk. And they had like a machine where they would dip, you know, you could get like a vanilla ice cream popsicle or you could get a banana, you could dip them and then they would dip them in like, I guess they do this at a fair or the boardwalk too, but you could get them dipped in sprinkles. And that's what I always had. And it was actually amazing because the chocolate, you ate it before the chocolate got like hard. So it was sort of, oh my God, it was so good. I might go get one. I'm going to be home in a few weeks.
You're going to need to send pics.
I'm going to actually 100% go get one.
Wow.
I'm really excited now. I'm going to put it in my calendar so I don't forget. Go get banana at mall. Go get mall banana.
And this is why I love doing this pod, because shout out to Tom for bringing us back to a memory that has brought action to our lives. Bits is going to go to the mall.
I am activated because of his delicious looking bake. His to me was the one I would pick over all others. Just yes. in terms of flavor, I love a cinnamon bun. He had some orange in there.
Yes, he did.
So shout out for showing up for orange. Mm-hmm. We mentioned it earlier in the episode, but Nadia's looked beautiful.
Beautiful. She
it hers looked the most refined of any of these. I think that one actually I could see in a, you know, a nice bakery window and mm-hmm. be like, that's nice.
Yep. So she did brioche, which I love a brioche, with a raspberry creme pat that dyed everything red. I loved that.
I love that.
I love raspberries, and I liked her work. I thought
she did fresh,
professional. Yeah. It was beautiful. I think that someone we haven't spoken about too much, but Leslie. I guess we spoke about her in her head to head with Natalia. We got to talk about Jasmine,
who,
as we said, took the episode. Jasmine had a beautiful coron, which are crown shaped breads. And hers was a midsummer celebration. So there was cinnamon, a lot of cinnamon, which is normally an American thing, but a lot of cinnamon this week too. And pretty much Paul looked at her and just gave her the direct stare of like this. It was a game recognized.
Yeah.
Game. Like you have excelled this week. You have proven that you are an exceptional bread baker and you get your flowers.
Yes. Yes. And then, of course,
speaking of flowers, about
Aaron.
Yes.
Because his was unreal. Also, an honorable mention to Leslie's flowers. We didn't talk about the daisies when we mentioned hers, but they looked great.
Yeah, they were really nice.
Aaron, fuck yeah. I just was so glad to see him. I think Aaron is my favorite contestant this season. Like, is he our Miss Congeniality so far?
Oh, it's too soon to tell.
I think he's my favorite. Like, I'm going to pull for this guy. Maybe he'll go home next week, in which case I'll have egg on my face, but egg wash. He was incredible. He made an in memoriam for his friends who convinced him to come on Bake Off, and he didn't have any orange, was the only thing he missed. Mm. But it just looked beautiful. The marzipan was good. The fruit level was good. Prue said it was pretty faultless. I wonder if he's just like melting in the floor after her praise. Yeah.
He was clearly very emotional. I think when you do a tribute like this, you want it to go well. You don't want to like sour the memory anyway. But I actually thought he had they looked like sort of like black-eyed Susans, the yellow flowers with poppy seed in the center, which were beautiful. So cool. Like I was so drawn to it. And just the way he told the story of it, I thought was beautiful. And the execution was faultless, as Prue said. And so I was really happy to see him immediately feel the relief of knowing he wasn't going to go home. Like there was no way he was going home after that bake. And knowing that he had pulled it off, I think was a reward unto itself for him.
Completely, completely agree. So it did have a strong finish, our bread week. I think one thing to the, you know, was this about the bread enough? I did appreciate Paul had one comment on Jessica's bake where he basically kind of dinged her because all the flavor was coming from the filling. And so I was like, okay, at least we're nodding to that somewhat. But yeah, on the whole, it was a mid bread week.
Yeah. Wasn't one to write home about, but I was happy that Jasmine won. I was happy that Aaron pulled it off. And unfortunately, we see Poiman go home.
Bummer.
Were you surprised by this?
I was. And honestly, this might be my judgy table. I just feel like somebody, I don't know. I mean,
should
I guess she
right
had
into
two
judgy table?
Judging.
Okay, I don't have my phone for a time.
No, this will be,
Bits,
you know.
Your judgy table starts now.
I just think that was a bad, bad call. She had an awesome showstopper. I kind of feel like Ian, aside from the first, was sort of dragging it. It's not really even a judgy table. I just feel like – I just don't like when they send home people that have interesting – she wasn't good at Bread Week. That sucks. But she was just like a fun personality. She's somebody fun to hang out with in the tent. Mm-hmm. And I thought she had really cool flavor choices, like the red bean curd – just for like a monkey bread situation. Like, I don't know. It's probably not cool for her. She's probably like, yeah, I love this and I eat all the time. But I don't know. It just added She just added a nice dimension and just joviality. This isn't even judgy. This is just being sad.
Sad, defensive. That's sad. Okay, but we are critiquing the show. To me, the elimination of Poimon this episode felt a bit cumulative.
Yeah, which is not it. Really,
it's not it. It's a very tough line that these shows have to walk. Yeah. Every single cooking show, every single like competition reality show has this issue where there's always one person who kind of skates by week after week. But then, of course, when it really counts, they inevitably get eliminated.
Yep.
And so it always happens. But I think that it felt as though she was being – exactly what happened last week happened this week. She really didn't perform on day one and then really outperformed on day two.
Yeah.
And I think that they were clearly willing to let that slide once, but it kind of felt like they were sending a message of like, that's not going to fly anymore. It felt a bit like a warning shot to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, there have been some clunkers this – I mean, there's been a decent amount of clunkiness this season.
And I think that she and Aaron are in different boats this episode because, like, Aaron's bread objectively for the monkey bread was the worst. It didn't rise. Mm-hmm. And that's just on bread week a non-starter.
Yeah.
All of those puns intended. But Poimon, although I guess, like, her donuts didn't rise and her bread – like. Yeah, all to say.
It was two poor showings. I don't know. I mean, I think they made the right call. But I do think you're right. Like, I do think it was definitely influenced by past performance. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of taking back what I just said a moment ago about, you know, or being judgy about there being a lot of clunkers. I think that's one thing that the show is pretty great at is just maintaining the amateur aspect of this. Mm-hmm. Like, none of these people are influencers. I don't think we appreciate that enough.
Yeah.
Like, and none of these people. Maybe some of them are, but not like they're normal people that love to bake. And I really am happy that they've held the line on that.
Yes, I completely agree. Because, I mean, yeah, all of these people have other jobs. Some of them multiple jobs. Whereas Top Chef, you're seeing people at the top of their game.
Right.
And like this is their career. And so it obviously sets a different tone. And it's something that's very special about this show that, you know, we could never recreate in the States, really.
Never.
I have a mini judgy table. It's not that good, but in the spirit of doing judgy table.
Dear shit.
I don't have my phone, but Nancy, your judgy table starts now. Prue needs her own thing. Like, I don't think it's fair that Paul gets the handshake, but Prue does not have any sort of physical manifestation of excellence that she gets to reward. And I think that it's just like, I know that the Paul Hollywood handshake is like now sort of storied and institutionalized, and that's great. And last season we saw him like really lean into it too hard. But I think that Prue's opinion holds a lot of weight, but because she doesn't have the equivalent of a handshake, it's almost like she plays second fiddle. It doesn't matter what Prue thinks. It's only if Paul thinks it's good or not. And I don't think that's fair. Prue's now been around longer than Mary Berry. She deserves like a real stake in the ground of what when she gets to say this is good, this is not the end.
Ugh, I could not agree more. I love that one. That's a perfect judgy table. I don't know what you're talking about. I 100% agree. She needs a thing. It feels imbalanced. And I personally respect her point of view on everything more. And maybe it's because she doesn't have that gimmicky thing.
Yes, I think that's also part of it. But like there were actually moments on tonight's episode where they disagreed a lot.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, that severe, but she was like, I don't know what Paul's talking about. I like this.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting when judges disagree. We see that on Top Chef. Like it's fascinating when people who are experts in something have arrive at different conclusions. That is interesting on its own.
I completely agree. And it's interesting that it's only the two of them. Like, it's kind of wild that it's just two people's
opinion.
Someone's got to win out. And I think that's also the result of a byproduct of having challenges that are not super core technical, make a great ciabatta. Because it just leaves just a lot of subjectivity for flavor choices as well.
Yeah, and in that, I feel like the default is always to go with Paul's opinion, but I think Prue should win out sometimes, and I think she should have a platform.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, anyway, that's this week's episode.
That's this week. Wait, what's next week? What are we baking?
What is week four? Let's see. Bake off week four. It's back to school week. No idea what that means.
We're definitely getting like a hot dog bun or something.
Yeah, we're getting a hot dog. It might be, or you know what I think it's going to be? Remember those like crackers with the fake cheese in between them, like the Ritz sandwiches?
Oh, that could be fun.
Like it's going to be like snack food type.
Yeah, things. Like maybe they don't really do PB&Js, but okay.
Or maybe like, I feel like British schools probably have weird cafeteria foods that they all like have memories of.
Yeah. Do they? They put like marshmallow on a lot of shit.
We're going to find out.
Yeah, we're
going to
find out. Wow. I'm actually, I'm super excited. Okay. Nancy, I'll see you next time.
See ya. Bye.